So the topic of our discussion this evening is Creator and Creation. We all know that the popular religious belief, the followers of all religions, is that this whole nature or universe is a creation of God. All the religions address this question, how this wonderful complex universe come into being, how it has come into being. And if you read the scriptures in their outward textual form, you get that strongly, you get that idea of a creator who creates the universe, and this is creation. Now, you take a Bible for instance, you open the book of Genesis, you find the idea of creation coming very strongly in it. It says, the God created heaven and earth, and earth was formless, and there was darkness on the face of the deep, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. And it goes on to say how God created the firmament and the waters and so on and so forth, how he created man in the image of God. It's all creation, creation, creation. Now, in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we had a reading. If you read it as it is, in the literal sense, it gives very strongly the personal God idea. There is an idea of a God, a creator who creates all this. Now, take Vishnu Purana. And Vishnu Purana and even Bhagavata Purana gives an extensive discourse on how the universe came into being. And if you read the text as it is, in the literal sense, you take the meaning of the words and metaphors and symbols used there, literally, you get very strongly the idea of a creation by God and many gods, the minor gods. You get that idea very strongly. Now, the point that we are trying to make is that though the religious scriptures treating of the subject of how universe and man and all the wonderful things, creatures have come into being, gives us an impression of a creator and a creation. That is on the outer garb of religious texts. Actually, in truth, if you go into the hidden meaning of the text, if you go to the what the symbols stand for, instead of taking the symbols and metaphors used in the literal sense, if we educate ourselves to understand the true significance of those symbols and metaphors, then we find the idea of creation and the creator doesn't come there. Now, what are the metaphors used? In the book of Genesis, we quoted the darkness was on the face of the deep. Darkness is a metaphor, symbol. The deep is a symbol. And let there be light, and there was light. Light is a symbol. The light that we are acquainted with is not the light spoken of in Genesis. So there's some other significance. So we have then the outer exoteric. Exoteric means outward, which the public in general understand. If you take the exoteric outer meaning, it gives us one sense. From it, a strong exocosmic God comes into picture as a creator. But if you go beyond the revealed world into the hidden meaning of the symbols used, then you get altogether a different, highly philosophical and metaphysical, scientific exposition of the evolution of the universe from the unknown into visibility, not as a creator creating anything, but as a spontaneous evolution of pre-existing idea into concrete manifestation. Of course, you do find in them many creative powers coming into action, but these creative powers are not apart from nature or the universe, but they are intracosmic, intelligent, creative forces of nature, not apart from nature. You get this very clearly, this metaphysical, highly philosophical glimpse into the truth. So we must make an effort to go beyond the mere world of the Vedas and try to comprehend the true significance behind the revealed world, to comprehend the unrevealed Veda, as Mr. Judge says. We can do that because we have, each one of us, the ability, the power, the knowledge, innate wisdom, the faculty of apprehending truth directly. We have all that, yes. And once we recognize that there is a hidden meaning in the outer symbolical scriptural exposition and strive to grasp it, then that higher divine consciousness in us comes to our help, rescue from within, to illuminate our minds, to apprehend the inner meaning. It's a very important process everyone must attempt. Now, coming to this idea of creation, coming to this idea of creation by a creator, if you accept this literally, as is naturally people do, taking the dead letter of the scriptures into as in the literal sense, it is natural, because this happens because of our natural ignorance. But one must, as already said, try to overcome and get to the truth of things. And if you just judge the outer scriptures, the truth of things elude us, so we become deluded. Then you may ask, why all the scriptures are written in symbols and allegories, and there is no way by which it could be represented except in mythical language, because all those great truths of the anthropic and cosmic evolution and development and their relationship and final destiny, dealing with the spiritual, the psychic and the physical forces, can it be expounded in lengthy philosophical discourses? It is impossible. And masses would never understand, and never, the truth will be lost if it is so expounded and preserved. So they have to symbolize all this, personify and symbolize these forces and principles of man and nature, and put them in mythical language, allegoric and allegories, so that the uninstructed, simple-minded people take them in a literal meaning and thereby preserve it. Because even in the exoteric exposition, there is a great beauty in them, and also important moral instruction which is needed for the people in general. So that's the only way by which it could be preserved. But whereas those who are instructed in the hidden science, they read in those very outer expositions of scriptures the hidden meaning. So the scriptures, religious scriptures, whether it is the Bible, the Vedas, or the Zen Avesta of the Zoroastrians, or any other world scriptures, they have two aspects. The outer garb, which the people take it as the literal sense, and the inner essence, which only the instructed, the initiated apprehend. Whether the initiate belongs to any part of the world, to any other race, any race. But when you read the scriptures of any other race or hears them read, immediately he knows what the meaning is, though he may not know the language, because he has awakened that inner capacity to apprehend the truth of things, which is latent in all of us. Now, it is very important for us to overcome this personal God idea. Once you postulate a creator of the universe, it necessarily implies that creator is outside the created. If the creator or God created the world, it necessarily implies that the creator is apart from matter or nature which he creates, and apart from the laws of nature which he is supposed to have created. And if you have such an idea of God and nature, then it leads us to many absurdities, and it leads us to very unscientific and unphilosophical conclusions. If creation is, if matter is created, if nature is created by God, as becomes evident if you read the dead letter presentation of the book of Genesis, then if something is created out of nothing, ex nihilo nihil fit, it is an absurdity. And science has shown us nothing can be created out of nothing. The ancient cosmogony, the ancient doctrine of the evolution of the universe, repudiates such an idea. It is not so. So it leads to unscientific and unphilosophical conclusion, and also it gives us an idea of God to be a personal God on which you have to depend upon and obtain his intercession in human affairs with prayers and supplications, and who punishes his created beings, human beings, and rewards the good and punishes the evil doer, and so on and so forth. And you will find here that the whole of this concept not only is totally opposed to what is real and true, but also it leads human mind in the wrong direction, away from reality. What is our purpose in life? Our purpose in life is to apprehend the true nature of our being. That alone will lead to emancipation. To apprehend the true nature of our being, then we must have the right knowledge and the right philosophy. The mind has to be given the right kind of direction. And how does the mind get the right direction? By dwelling upon the right knowledge, the right ideas, which truly represent the reality, the truth of things, the universal ideas. Mind has to dwell on that and apprehend thereby the true nature of things, the true nature of the self, the true nature of the universe, and apprehend the unity binding all. And with that insight, one begins to see the true meaning of the scriptures, which deal with the origin and evolution of the universe, and the relationship of man and universe and all beings, and their interconnectedness, and how each is a copy of the whole, and what their ultimate destiny is, such that man is never apart from nature, and God, so-called, is not apart from the cosmos, but all are one. So, if you don't make this effort to get beyond the dead letter and apprehend the truth of things, then if we remain stuck with this anthropomorphic, exocosmic, personal God idea, then it leads mankind to very dangerous path. Then false theologies will arise based on such absurd beliefs, and man stuck in such wrong beliefs will suffer the atrophy of the ability of true philosophic conception, and that is the most dangerous thing. Once you believe in an outside God who will save you, then it is the contradiction of the very law of our being. What is the law of our being? The fundamental axiom of theosophy, ancient wisdom, is there is no gifts or boons conferred upon man except that which is won by his own ego, by his own effort and merit through long series of reincarnations and metempsychosis. The great teachers find the way out and give you the true doctrine and give you the basis for the right thought and right action, right living, and leave you to apply this and unfold the power symbol. Therefore, the personal God idea should, the sooner we get rid of the personal God idea and get the true conception of deity and nature and man, the better for us. And the many abuses that takes place in society born of wrong belief and wrong ideas would be mitigated. This is the only way of true reform. Now, consider how, if you carefully study the scriptures and take trouble to get to the inner meaning, we clearly see that personal God idea doesn't come there at all. The creator and the creation idea doesn't come there at all. Now, let's take up a few verses from the Bhagavad Gita and carefully go through some of the verses to illustrate the point that we are making. Now, let's go to the chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, what does Krishna say here? The Lord of the world creates neither the faculty of acting nor actions, nor connection between action and its fruits, but nature prevaileth in these. The Lord receives no man's deeds, be they sinful or full of merit. So, what does it say? Here, the Lord should never be taken as a person. The Lord spoken of here is the Lord of the body. Who is the Lord of the body? The Spirit. Spirit of the body. The Spirit in the body, called Maheshwara, the great Lord, the spectator, the admonisher, the sustainer, the enjoyer, Paramatma, the highest soul. It is the universal soul and spirit which is manifest in man as his higher divine consciousness, which is impersonal. The soul presides over the sense of smell, the taste, the touch, the sight, the hearing, the faculty of thinking. That soul, the seer, the perceiver, is eternal, portion of the Supreme, and the very embodiment of the law. So his inseparable portion of everyone as a soul is inseparable portion of the Supreme Spirit. So Supreme is present in all. And that is the Lord, Lord of the universe, Lord of the body. And never a person, never a person. And Christ, Buddha, they are all divine principle in man, impersonal, higher consciousness. And here the idea is that there is no creation. The Lord of the world creates neither the faculty of acting, karmendriyas, nor actions, nor the connection between action and its fruits. But nature prevaileth in these, swabhava. It is swabhava, acquired nature, the acquired characters, the three qualities prevail in these, but the true self remains apart from it. It is nature made up of the three qualities which furnish the instrument for the spirit to become embodied as soul and knower and thinker, who through this embodiment receives experiences and with the faculties of knowledge and action acts in the world of time and space and gains experiences in order to learn. Why? In order to learn, thereby the nature of his true self as distinguished from the experiences and the his experiences and all his lessons that he learns in life, all goes to through this. He has to learn the nature of the world, the nature of his being, and his true self to be apart from all this. In order to arrive at the true nature of the self, this experience is necessary. So Lord receives no man's deeds, be they sinful or full of merit. So it is impersonal. So the ultimate cause is the Supreme Spirit, which is absolute, it is unknowable, and it is the very law itself by which the universe comes into being and goes out of being in regular succession of cycles. That's what Krishna says in the next verse we will consider from chapter 8. Now, how did the universe come into being? How does it exist? And what is its destiny? Look what is said in the Bhagavad Gita. This is from the 8th chapter. All the worlds up to that of Brahman are subject to rebirth again and again. But they, O son of Kunti, who reach to me have no rebirth. So there is some unchangeable, absolute reality. And in that prelude, in regular section, succession, universes evolve, come out. It is beautifully, graphically mentioned in the Puranas as when Brahma breathes out, the whole universe has come into being. When Brahma breathes in, the whole universe goes out of existence, back to the unknown. Now here again, personification is history. Brahma is not a person who breathes in and breathes out. It is the absolute abstract motion, the great breath. Periodically, from it, an impulse goes out and universe has come into existence and evolve. And when an impulse is indrawn, the universe will go out of existence. And this is going on eternally, from time without beginning. When did it begin? Anadi. When it will end? Ananta. It has been going on, time without beginning, and will go on, time without end. This is what he said. So there is no creation here. It is periodical manifestation of the unknown objecta and coming into vyakta, and all the beings come into existence. All the worlds up to that of Brahma are subject to rebirth again and again, but they, O son of Kunti, who reached me, have no rebirth. Similarly, we as a universe have in our inmost self a changeless eternal self. But this personalities come and go, but we as eternal ego self, birthless, endless. So this perfect analogy. Those who are acquainted with day and night, says the Bhagavad Gita, know that the day of Brahma is 1,000 revolutions of the yugas, and that his night extended for 1,000 more. At the coming on of the day, all things issue forth from the unmanifested into manifestation. So on the approach of that night, they merge again into the unmanifested. This collection of existing things, having thus come forth, is dissolved at the approach of night. O son of Pita. And now again, on the coming on of the day, it emanates spontaneously. But there is that which upon the dissolution of all things else is not destroyed. It is indivisible, indestructible, and of another nature than the visible. This, called the unmanifested, exhaustless, is called the supreme goal, which having once attained, they never more return. It is my supreme abode, and that supreme abode, changeless, eternal self, is our true inner self, the inner self of all. There is but one self. So you see here, man, the universe are one. Man himself is divine. The supreme itself takes on all these forms, takes on the form of individual selves in order to arrive at a knowledge of true self. So there is no creation at all. And let's consider a very beautiful passage in the Vishnu Purana to say, which clearly says that when manifestation takes place, it always takes place following the results of action of beings of previous periods of evolution. It is somewhat analogous to the law of reincarnation. When we come into life, when we are born here, it is not an accident. The personality that we get, the body, the environment, the faculties, the powers, tendencies, character, all the good and evil in us, is not something endowed on us by some extra cosmic deity. It is something that we had earned and made by our own thought and actions of previous life. So, causes having been generated, previous life having come to its end, These causes become the seeds for the future next birth, which the circumstances of which will be the exact result of the action that we had performed in the past. So that what we bring back from previous life is called samskara. Now let's read in the glossary the meaning of samskara. It's a beautiful, beautiful philosophical idea. Now what does samskara mean? Samkara means to improve, to refine, to impress. We come here in order to improve our knowledge, to refine our nature and make it more and more agree and vibrate and become one with the divine, to refine and elevate and spiritualize nature, that we have come here. Now samskara, sam kru, to improve, to refine, to impress. In Hindu philosophy the term is used to denote the impressions left upon the mind by individual actions or external circumstances and capable of being developed on any future favorable occasion, even in a future birth. Samskara denotes therefore the germs of propensities and impulses from previous births to be developed in this or coming janmas or reincarnations. So actually the universe. Now one of the aphorisms of karma, we have a pamphlet called entitled Aphorisms of Karma. There are 32 aphorisms which are very important one must study. One of the aphorisms says, how did this earth and all the beings, this earth chain is a stream of evolution, how did it come into being? It says that the thoughts and actions of all the beings concerned in the previous stream of evolution, consisting of the highest, highly evolved Dhyanibuddhas, great beings, to the lowest evolved and even the wicked, the sum total of actions of all the beings concerned the previous period of evolution have remained as this seeds to be developed when that previous worlds came to an end, and the sum of the karmic seeds of the action of all the beings concerned becomes the seed for the evolution of, became the seed for evolution of the present chain, earth, the present chain, chain of the present earth. Actually earth is a chain of 7 planets. So this is what exactly the Vishnu Purana teaches. So no one creates, and what Vishnu Purana says is that giving a, you know, reading behind or going back off the anthropomorphic idea of Brahma creating, actually it says Brahma creates, but then we must go beyond the revealed world and understand what Brahma really stands for. Brahma really stands for creative forces. So when Brahma creates worlds, he invariably creates them in accordance with the tendencies of the beings who went out of existence in the previous world. I will read a couple of verses, very beautiful verses, and their English translation from the Vishnu Purana. The first primordial divine creator Brahma, Bhagavan Adikrit Prabhu, Tat Sarjatada, He created in this manner. In what manner? According to the karma, samskara of beings of previous period of creation. Tesham ye yani karmani prak sushtram sushtam pratipidare. Prak sushtram, previous creation. The same qualities, the same tendencies of character, those beings obtain again and again in every new creation. I read this again. The first primordial divine creator, Brahma, created in this manner according to the samskara of beings of previous period of creation. In every creation, it says, the same qualities and tendencies and character of those beings appear again and again in every new creation. And whatever propensities creatures have developed, creatures have developed in previous creation, whether they be violent or non-violent, whether soft or cruel, whether righteous or unrighteous, whether truthful or untruthful, obtain the same tendencies in each creation. And creatures find these acquired natures congenial and agreeable. So, whatever nature you have acquired, in that you revel and feel happy. Tasmat tat tasya rochate. Now, a very good analogy is given here. You have this seasons rolling, right? The spring, and then summer, and then rain, rainy season, and then the autumn and the winter. They keep on coming one after the other, rolling in cycles. Though seasons again and again come and go in cycles, the same different kinds of forms and signs which appear in each season appear again and again when they reappear. So, though the seasons again and again come and go, the same different kinds of forms and signs appear in each. And in each new creation, forms and signs and characters appear which had appeared in the previous creation. Similarly, when a stream of evolution or the world comes to an end, and when a new world goes into manifestation, it will be invariably along the line of swabhava, along the line of acquired nature of beings. And a wonderful statement made here is, it speaks of the power of creation of the creator and the power of tendencies and acquired nature. These two powers are there. So in the beginning of each kalpa, Vishnu Purana says, in the beginning of each kalpa, Brahma creates again and again in this manner. He endowed with the power of creation, Sisuksha Shakti. He is impelled in his creation by the power of tendencies or acquired natures of the creature. It is Sujja Shakti. So, the creative forces are endowed with Sisuksha Shakti, the power of creation, but then they exercise the power of creation along the line of Sujja Shakti, along the line of tendencies acquired by the creatures in the past, which they cannot transcend. So that's why Krishna says here, the swabhava acts here, and spirit is free from it. So we see here the very important teaching that what comes out of this discussion is that no one is responsible for the condition in which we are. It is, we are because what we have made ourselves. No one will save us and improve us except ourselves. No man binds us, no man frees us, free, free, No man liberates us. The bondage and liberation is in our own hands. This is a very important idea that we must get over this anthropomorphic idea of dependence upon imaginary external God who has no existence, and understand that you yourself are deity, you yourself are a God and God Supreme, and you yourself are, as a microcosm, illustrate in you all the laws and principles and forces of nature, and take the law in your hand and guide your evolution. That's why Krishna says, every man is involuntarily urged to act by the qualities which spring from nature. But then man is inherently above qualities because he is a spirit. So he is here to learn this lesson. As long as we cling to wrong ideas and move by passions and impulses of rajasic and tamasic nature and become merely stuck in sattvic happiness, then we remain bound. But once we begin to recognize that my true self is beyond qualities, beyond the dvandvas, he is the Supreme Lord itself, which is free. Purusha paraha, prakritistha purusha. Purusha, who is involved in prakriti, is all these embodied beings. Purusha, who is free from all forms and qualities, is the same Purusha, who is free, and you are that. So once you realize this, and get over the defects, the wrong tendencies, right? And by deliberate action based on the knowledge of the true. One of the aphorisms of karma says that we have the power and the ability to bring about a complete change in our sway, in the sway of the karmic destiny, by deliberate action to overcome bad tendencies, to overcome defects, by setting up counteracting causes and bring about a complete change in our whole destiny. There is no other way by which we can get over defects, acquire the virtues, and develop the inner capacities for knowledge and understanding and evolve. So, look what Krishna says. All creatures act according to their natures. Even the wise man seeketh for that which is homogeneous with his own nature. So therefore all creatures act according to their natures. What then will restraint effect? Now you see here many tragic things happen in society. Can any legislation bring about change in the character of the people? No. The change in the character of the people, in which lies the true solution to the problems, from which arises all the conditions which surround us, favorable or unfavorable, full of difficulty or help, or full of evil or good, all emanate ultimately from human character. And that human character is formed by our actions which go into long past, and it has to be addressed, and the character has to be built along the new lines according to the right ideas, with full assumption of self-responsibility. and then only can the changes be brought about. I think we'll stop here and we can take up questions.